Hey, good morning. Welcome to the Raptors show. Raptors lose last night 137-118 to the Chicago Bulls and are now officially eliminated from playoff and play-in contention. Congratulations to those Bulls who lock up a play-in spot. Coby White, East Player of the Month, coming off a couple Players of the Week and locks in the play-in spot. I'm sure Raptors fans are okay with that outcome, given that the Raptors are still three games on either side of them. They are in seventh. They are three games clear of six, three games clear of eight, with six to go here. That finale against San Antonio looking potentially spicy on the last day of the season, which is next Sunday. We got a bunch of shows before then. Quick shout out to Scotty Barnes, Darko Rajakovic, and Jamal Shedd, who were nominees for the Eastern Conference Defensive Player of the Month, Coach of the Month, and Rookie of the Month, respectively, although I think I said those in the wrong order, but you know what I mean. Fun night in basketball. Garrett Temple, who we talked to a little earlier, mentioned Nikola Jokic's 61-point triple-double in a double overtime loss. Steph went 52, 10, 8, and 5. We'll see how much time we get to talk to that stuff because we have a couple of great guests today. Garrett Temple's going to join us in a minute here. And my first favorite Toronto Raptor, Jose Calderon, is joining us in the second half of the show. So let's get right into it. We chatted with Garrett a little earlier this morning. Here is that chat. Hi, good morning, Garrett. Guys, what a terrific shirt you're in. A Toronto Raptors Ninja Turtle shirt. Am I seeing that right?
That's exactly right, man. It's my son's favorite shirt. It's Donatello on there. So, and our family of my, he's given everybody of the family the character of Ninja Turtle. So this is my wife, is Donatello, because she wears glasses. So she's Donatello.
Which one are you?
I'm Raphael.
Okay.
He's Leonardo because he's the leader.
Okay.
And my daughter Verity is Michelangelo. Now Sloan, who's sleeping next to me, she's a Master Splinter. Now
okay.
So I'm like, maybe I should be Master Splinter too. And then we give Sloan one of the turtles.
Yeah. That
we'll see.
Yeah, you guys could always tweak it up. So will your son change it up? So like I have a nephew who's like four, and his is Spider-Man instead of Ninja Turtles. But every time I go home and visit, I'm a different one. It gets switched up on me all the time.
He doesn't change up.
Okay.
It's no changing at all. It's very much, this is you.
Okay.
No, I'm Leonardo. No, Verity is Michelangelo. So no switching up for him. He's four as well.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Well, great shirt. Before we get into Raptor stuff, I got to ask, man, Paige Bueckers did the impossible. She got you to tweet. How much are you enjoying March Madness in general, but those couple of Paige outings there, 40 piece in the tournament.
Man. Yeah, she's just tough, bro. I've been a fan of her for a long time. My basketball trainer, Chauncey Hollingsworth, is based out of Minnesota, where Paige is from, and he's worked with her a few times. And the biggest thing for Paige for me is her awareness of just everything that is not dealing with basketball, just life in general. She's just a great person. She's a follower of Christ, and she understands the bigger meaning of, you know, just the different things that go on in life and the awareness that she has. So shout out to Paige. You know, she doesn't get nearly as much love as she should based on how great of a basketball player in person she is.
Well, Friday night, there's been a lot of eyes on her this tournament, but Friday night, as we get a little closer there on the women's side, should be a lot of fun. Well, for that UConn team, have you gotten to check? Like, do you get to check out much of the tournament games? Like, obviously, if you guys have an off night, I was talking to Jamal. He's obviously trying to keep an eye on Houston, but you guys have lined up. You know, your games have lined up with them. Do you get to watch much of it? And if you do, like, how much do you watch it with an awareness of like one of these guys could be our teammate next year?
Yeah, you know, that's actually I watched Duke and. I watched the Duke-Alabama game. I watched the entire Florida. I watched most of the Florida-Texas Tech game, which was amazing. You know, especially the fact that they were talking about the young boy, I mean, the starting guard from Florida and him being the closer. I didn't know much about any of these guys. And then he was literally the closer. He was killing. It was really fun to watch. Yeah, so I've watched those two games, and you know, Milo Watch is one to look at, and you know, for Duke, and you know, I'm interested to see. I mean, obviously, Cooper Flag is amazing. All of these young guys, all of these other young guys. But I definitely watched those two games and were intrigued by what I saw.
This is, you know, not to put you on the spot scouting-wise, so this doesn't have to be about Malawach. This can be about that type of big, generally, a rim runner and a guy who can do that defensively. When you look at a guy like that and then you think of, hey, what would this guy look like in NBA spacing or with NBA point guard play or, you know, not even point guard, but next to a Scotty or someone like that, how much can you see how that would translate? Like, obviously, he's very young. He's pretty raw. But when you see, hey, that type of player, what would that look like in the NBA? Like, are you able to make that translation pretty good when you watch these guys?
I think so, because of what I'm looking for. So, like, with him, he's a defensive big, so you want to see, you know, a big thing for him, he really gets in a stance defensively when he's guarding a pick and roll, and that's difficult for a 7'2 guy. He has an ability to be able to, you know, change shots because of his length. He has pretty active hands on defense. He's not the most athletic, but he's 7'2", so he doesn't have to be in terms of being able to, you know, jump and have a quick jump and things of that nature. And again, you have to remember he's only 18. Mm-hmm. So when I look for a big like that, you look at the details of how they guard pick and roll. Can they catch? How good are their hands? What's their positioning? Things like that, because that those are the things that they, you know, that they have to learn. But if they know a lot of it already, then they'll be able to come around quicker. And obviously, the things that are obvious to see are the athleticism, the ability to move, things of that nature. So, yeah, I look at it. When I look at those guys, I definitely look at them, you know, a little more detailed than the average person.
This is good. I've been trying to check off, okay, what would broadcaster Garrett be like, coach Garrett, front office Garrett? Now we're getting scout Garrett. We're getting all the different potential future Garrett Temples in here. Okay. Last night you guys had a, you know, bit of a tough one against the Bulls. That's a Bulls team. They were on a back-to-back, but they've been playing pretty well, right? Like Kobe White, player of the month, Josh Giddey's been rolling. They're locked into a play-in spot now. Compared to when you guys saw them earlier in the year, what do you think's clicking for that team? What did you see last night from them?
Man, the one thing they did earlier in the year that they still do is move the ball. They move the heck out of the ball, man. And I'm really just happy to see, you know, Kobe playing really well. That's my young guy. I love Billy Donovan. He's one of the best coaches I've had. And I think the fact that they don't have, like, an all-star on the team bodes well for that type of team that, like, loves to move the ball and they play with a lot of pace. They're just shooting the ball at a very high rate right now. And that's when you move the ball as well as they do and you have a lot of people shooting the ball well, then, you know, that's what happens. You score pretty easily. And I think Josh Giddey has continued to get better and better. His ability to get in the paint kind of at will is great. It creates a lot of two to the ball scenarios, which allows them to play the way they play. Catch, drive, create another closeout, things of that nature. And again, like I said, the shots falling really help them out. So when you can move the ball as well as they do in the half court and then they play a lot of transition, offensively they're pretty tough to, you know, tough to stop.
So a rough one for you guys last night, but you had won four in a row before that. So maybe the answer to this one is obvious. But how have you found your guys have responded to, A, the kind of rhythm of like, hey, a couple guys are out tonight, a couple different guys are out tomorrow, and then B, the, you know, at least that little bit of noise about like, hey, backward standing, reverse standings and things like that. How have you found your guys have responded the last couple of weeks?
Or horrendously. No, I'm just messing with you. They responded well. I mean, you know, it helps to have a younger team and guys that are just like, I could care less. I'm just out here trying to hoop. I'm trying to win. I'm trying to compete. And that's the type of guys we have. Again, I've continuously talked about what type of personalities, you know, Bobby and Masai have brought to this team. And those are the type of guys that we have on this team. So the habits have been built in and guys are just playing basketball the way that they've been taught, the way they know how. So, you know, you can see, obviously, like you said, we won four in a row before that. Guys are playing well. You know, Orlando Robinson had some good games. Jamal Shea before the last couple have been playing well. Kobe shot the ball really well last night. So there are a lot of good things to see. And I think this might be the first game that Yak played where we didn't win, like, while he was playing. So everybody, you know, I think Quickly, honestly, has had some pretty good games when he's been playing over the last few. Really attacking the basket, him and Yak have been getting a good rapport with each other in that pick and roll. So it's really a lot of good things that we can build off of for next year.
Yeah, it's great. It's fun to see. And yeah, you mentioned Jacoby 5 of 5 on threes last night. Pretty good when it's dropping like that. He didn't play a lot last night, but Jared Roden comes in, he gets 8 points in 4 minutes and like really makes himself. What have you seen? Because I've watched a lot of 905 this year, so I've gotten a good look at him and AJ. And then we obviously haven't seen Jared quite as much at the NBA level. What have you seen from him when you've been with him? And you appreciate that, hey, you're only going to get 4 minutes here in a blow. Go get your numbers.
I love it. You know, that's J-Roll. Like, Jared Roden is for sure an NBA player. He has the size, he has the build, he has the ability to score. He can guard. You know, it's just a matter of, it's literally the cliche of numbers game. He just needs to find the right spot. But there's no question that he's an NBA player in this league. And I told him when he walked off the court, I said, way to take advantage of your opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever minutes you get, you know, that's what I tell all these guys, whether it's the guys on 10 days like Cole or Colin before, or whether it's the two-way guys that are going to get a shot, you know, since their G League season is over and the way that our rotation is going, they're going to get their chances, whether it's 4 minutes and maybe 24 minutes another game. You know, so just take advantage of your time on there, because you're not only playing for Toronto, but you're playing for, you know, 20, 28, 29 other teams. So his ability to score is and get in the paint again, not be afraid, is high level. Now, a team is not going to have him as their lead scorer, obviously, at least not now. So he just has to do the little things as well. And I think that's what he's focusing on with still being able to score the ball, obviously. So shout out to J-Roll.
Yeah, it's one of the hardest things of covering the G League over the years. You see a guy drop 40, and it's like, okay, but no one's asking you to do that at the next level, right? Like, you're gonna score 4 at the next level, but do all the little things. It's tough. And like, some guys figure it out, like Jared might figure it out. You know, you guys got him for next year too, so that's great. And then there are some guys that just like never figure it out, and it's like I don't. I think it was Jordan McRae for the 76ers a couple years ago. He's like 40 piece every time he went to the G League, and then he'd come up, but like, some guys can only play that way, right? And you can't, it took Christian Wood like a couple years of dominating in the G League before he could find that role. It's like, how does a backup big play, you know, in the Lakers system instead of with the ball in your hand every time? It's got to be a tough change.
It's a very tough change. And I think that's one of the things that is overlooked in terms of why people don't make it in the NBA. You know, a lot of people may say you don't have the skills, or you don't have this, or you can't guard, or you can't shoot. A lot more times than not, it's you can't fit in a lesser role than what you're used to doing at other levels of basketball. And when I say lesser role, I mean literally just less scoring. You know what I'm saying? Because they don't, you know, if you're a two-way guy, or if you're in the G League and you're coming up on a 10-day, you're not going to be, at least for the foreseeable future, a scoring option. Now, your ability to score is a plus, but you're not going to be forcing it. So, you know, Jordan McRae, like you said, he had some games in the NBA where he was just a scoring machine, but he didn't do the other little things, you know, obviously well enough for teams to keep him around. So that's the things that a guy like Jared Roden, A.J. Lawson, you know, A.J.'s been playing great defensively over the last month. Just, you know, you can see it on film. It's just, he's changed, and he's never been a defender, but he's like, okay, I see on this team. And in the NBA, I need to guard as well as shoot. And I think those guys just have really grown a lot on that side of the ball, which will help them, you know, really stick in the league.
That's great. And apologies if Jordan McRae is listening to this. I don't mean to single you out. It's just a name from a few years back in the G League. Garrett, changing. Pardon me?
He was a bucket.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, and a big smack talker, if I remember from that. Because so when we go to the, obviously, you know, at Raptors games, we don't sit close, right, as media. Right. But if you go to a G League game, you're like right beside the bench, like first or second row. So you get to hear all of it. It was the best when Stackhouse was the coach here, hearing him work the referees all game and stuff.
Right.
Speaking of coaches, Garrett, Michael Grange reported the other night that Darko's had his option picked up for 2026, 2027. So he's locked in for two more years now, at least, as head coach of the Raptors. I know Michael Grange talked to you a little bit for his piece writing about that. What is your, you know, read on the job Darko's done and the vote of confidence the front office has given him here to take this team into, you know, the next phase where the stakes will change moving forward?
I mean, I think he's done a great job. Being able to develop, I mean, I always go back to last year and what he signed, the kind of the team that he signed up with and what kind of was expected with the roster we had at the beginning of the season. And then all the turmoil that happened last year and his ability to continue to adapt and be flexible and, you know, just basically this summer changing everything around in terms of what we're trying to do. And then attacking that full force. I think the job he did this summer, getting everybody on the same page, understanding what our purpose was this year, starting to build those habits, and then throughout the year building those habits with not only the younger guys, but the guys that are in their fourth, fifth, sixth year, seeing the growth in RJ Barrett's defense, seeing the growth in Emmanuel Quickley's defense, his ability to get more downhill. You know, seeing the growth and obviously all the young guys throughout the season has been really tremendous. And like I said, like we've talked about it, we've gotten kind of so good. It's difficult to, you know, even with the rosters that we have, it's difficult to drop in the standings, which is a great thing for the players, a great thing for the coaches, because that shows what type of habits we've built. So shout out to Darko, you know, well-deserved. And you know, it's just a great building block that he's put in place for us to, like you said, make that next step next year and then years beyond.
In terms of the defensive building blocks, obviously each guy improving, you know, a little bit individually. You mentioned AJ Lawson, RJ Quickley, Scotty. I mean, if you guys had a better record, he'd be getting a lot of all defense buzz. I think there, when it comes to the system and schematically, you mentioned to Grange that Darko's put in some stuff that even you hadn't seen before or maybe never thought of. Can you go into a little bit of that about, you know, like if you had to define what you think this team's defensive identity is going to be going forward under Darko, and you know, where that element comes in of, hey, I haven't seen that. I haven't thought of that before.
Yeah, I think we help the helper a lot. And which is, you know, what you have to do in today's league because people can shoot the three so well. So what happens is you run people off of the three and so many things happen after that, you know, the closeouts. But one thing that we do is we, you know, kind of secondary transition, we force the ball to the middle. Whereas back in the day, when especially when I first came to league and for the first 8 years, you always force the baseline. Exactly. But we're big on forcing the ball to the middle. Being in heavy shifts, which we call eagles, and forcing people, the ball pressure that we do is not normal. My teammates can tell once we come up the court, dead tired after 3 minutes, but it's not normal. If you watch an NBA game, if you watch our game, how we defend versus how the other 29 teams defend, it's not the same. And I think that can be our identity, our ball pressure, our ability to get deflections, turn people over, speed people up. You know, the few times against Chicago last night where we had some pretty good defensive possessions were when we sped them up into shots that were quicker than they wanted, or there was not a lot of swing. They shot air balls, they missed shots, and that was positive for us. We just didn't do it enough last game. So just the ability to ball pressure, make defenses uncomfortable, make offenses uncomfortable, is something that people talk about, but it's very difficult to actually put into practice, and we've been able to do that.
Yeah, so if you're one of those guys that the Raptors are looking at in the draft, you better show up day one with the cardio on point because it seems exhausting.
You got to guard. You got to guard, but you know, you have to do things that are uncommon to get uncommon results at the end of the day. So you know, right now we don't have a team, we don't have a player that's going to go out and get you 61, 10, and 10 like somebody did last night. We don't have that right now. So, you know, but we do have a lot of players that can score a lot in transition and that can defend at a high level. And, you know, we have, you know, one guy that you're talking about, you know, Scotty has the ability to be all defensive. Jamal has that ability. But honestly, everybody else, we don't really have another guy that's like a lockdown defender. But we still have had such a great defense, and that's because of the habits that we've built and, you know, our schemes on that side of the ball. But honestly, how hard we play, mm-hmm. and which is the habits that we build, how hard we play on that side.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, obviously, Darko, from our conversations with you, from watching the team, there's been a ton of buy-in. Everyone's still very positive and hanging on the rope. And it's always one of the most fascinating things for any team. Next year, there's going to be expectations, right? And that'll feel a little different. And, you know, wins are going to be how you guys are measured next year. So it'll be a bit of a shift, but sounds like you're pretty confident Darko will be able to handle it.
I think so. I definitely think so.
Nice. Exhausting defense. I know you're exhausted because you were on baby duty last night too, so I'll let you go here, Garrett. Thanks so much for taking the time out. Appreciate you doing this.
Appreciate you, Blake. Have a good one, man.
Great chat with Garrett, as usual. Yeah, it takes uncommon practice to get uncommon results. That's a good sentiment there. Let's take a break. When we come back, Jose Calderon. Hell yeah. That's next as the Raptor Show continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Raptors Show. Blake Murphy with you. No Matt Bonner today, but happy to be joined by a very special guest, one of my all-time favorite Raptors and people who I've met in the industry, Jose Calderon. Jose, thanks so much for doing this, man. How are we doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Man, I guess before we get into the Raptors stuff, you're a special advisor to the Cavs. How are you feeling right now? It's been a pretty terrific year for you guys.
It's been great, you know, feel good to be there on top. But more than anything, just see the growth of a lot of our players. And now just wanted to finish, you know. Let's finish the right way, the regular season. Stay healthy. I think that's what everybody wants. But a great feeling going into this last part of the season for sure.
So in addition to your work with the Cavs, you've done a lot of stuff with the NBPA since you retired as well. What's that been like for you? I guess I was going to say in retirement. You're not really retired. You're still working for both of these things. How has the time with the NBPA been?
That was good. Now I cannot do both. Right. So, you know, after I finished with NBPA, it was my first 2 years since I retired. And after I switched to Cavaliers, so this is my fourth year with the Cavs. Like I said, just being involved in everything with them, it's been an amazing growth, you know, from the team perspective for me, learning a lot from an amazing team that I got the chance to work with. And spending a lot of time in Cleveland back and forth and traveling a little bit to watch a lot of games and players. And it's been fun. It's the best way to stay connected with basketball for sure.
That's great. And yeah, a little bit of time for you to come back to Toronto once in a while. You were here a couple weeks ago for 2000s night. It's obviously the 30th year here, so a lot of looking back. How was that for you? How was coming in? I know you did some of the broadcast as well.
It was great. It's always special for me to be back. I mean, Toronto is always going to be different than any other place. Just because it's not only because of the time that I spent there, that it was a long time, almost 8 years, but it's just like it was my first stop coming from Europe. It's my home. Got so many friends, not just in basketball, but outside of basketball as well. And I think that make everything, different. In some other places, I got a great stops, but you don't have maybe enough time to really get great relationships outside of your environment, you know. But in Toronto, I had the time and it was amazing. And yeah, always enjoy to be back there.
So in terms of your connection to the city, I remember hearing stories, even after you weren't here anymore, that some players the Raptors would acquire would stay at your place. Is that true?
Yeah, some of them stay at the beginning, and after it was just a family was there for a long time. I'm still on that place there in Toronto. But yes, a couple of them stay early when I left. And after that, it's just been other kind of people from everywhere. But yes, it happens.
So when obviously you were still in the league the year that the Toronto Raptors won the championship, but you guys were eliminated. What was that experience like for you, especially with Marc Gasol on the team, who I know you're friends with? Connection to the city, connection through Mark. Were you pretty invested in the Raptors?
Oh, yes. I always. I felt like I was part of it as well, in a sense, you know. But just not because I was there or the time I spent, but so many close friends that they work on the, you know, sometimes in the shadows of us players, that I know how hard they work and how important it was for them as well. So I was so happy. And after I got the chance to, Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka, Sergio Scariolo were part of the team. So it was really special in so many ways. So I was able to be there on the Kawhi Philadelphia shot. I was there with my son. So it was an amazing experience as well. So really happy for what happened, how it happens for the city, for the fans, for everybody that work in the organization. So it was an amazing time for sure.
I miss all those guys. I miss Sergio. He was the best halftime interview head coach, the best guy to talk to about stuff. Okay, so I want to go back to when you first came over. It's a little more common now for guys to go back and forth, Europe to the NBA. You weren't the first one to do it, but you know, Brian Colangelo around that time was, you know, they were doing it a little bit more. What do you remember about their pitch to you to get you to come to the NBA and Toronto specifically?
Well, at that time, it was even before that, because it was Rob Babcock who brought me. So it was even before that. For me, it was, you know, they saw me in Spain and after in Moscow and in the Final Four. I know they've been scouting me for a while. And I just went there. I went to Toronto for a visit, and that's where they really convinced me to make the step and come to the NBA. But it was kind of like a different experience all around. I got the chance to visit the city, but I got the best part was I went to Larry Tannenbaum's house, summer house. The whole family was there. I spent lunch with them there. Really, you know, want me to be part of the organization. And I knew that year it was going to be hard because a lot of changes was happening. But I love it. I love it since day one. And that's why I went. That was the moment they convinced me to, like, okay, this is the place. And here I went to the Raptors. Yeah.
So it's obviously a lot more, or not a lot more common, but it's more common now for guys to go back and forth a little bit. We heard Adam Silver discuss recently the NBA is continuing to explore an international expansion with FIBA. What that would look like, we don't really know yet. I saw you tweeting about it a little bit. How excited would you be to have the NBA, you know, have better roots in international basketball like that?
Yeah, I think it's going to be like I always say, like, everything that is basketball, it should be to help to keep growth the sport. I think NBA and FIBA got a great relationship. I think that's something that when they go together, it's going to be something good, you know. And we don't know if it's exactly like you say, all the information and how exactly it's going to happen. But I think, you know, NBA, the good thing about the NBA that people don't realize is the actual sport or brand or whatever you want to call it, that the actual is global. You can like soccer and you can like the Premier League, but you have La Liga and you got the, you know, Germany, or you got the so many. But NBA, you know, there is no competition with that. Everybody think, you know, and know that that's the number one. And for them to be able to be part somehow in Europe, I think it's important. I think it's great. And it's going to be good for basketball, and for the league as well. And we'll see what all the details come out. But I think it's a good idea. I know they've been working on it for a while. So it's one extra step what they announced this week about moving forward. And I think that's good news for basketball for sure.
Yeah, and good timing too. We're coming off such a good World Cup 2 years ago, such a great Olympics this year. When you look back on your career, Jose, is the 2006 World Cup when you guys won gold, is that like the high mark for you with some of the Olympic appearances?
I think that was special, but just not because we won. I think it was because it's what it meant for Spain basketball. And it's just, okay, we're here. And that was kind of like the start of, you know, a whole generation with all my teammates, you know, with Pau Gasol, with, you know, Marc Gasol joined us later, and Navarro and Rudy Fernandez, and after Ricky Rubio. And so it was so many years of really good basketball and being able to compete. We got the Eurobasket. The Olympic was the only one, you know, we couldn't get to the top. We lost four times against US. That's our team that we couldn't beat. But still, I think it was an amazing basketball. The two silver medals, the bronze medal in semifinals in Rio. So just having the possibility to compete and have an Olympic medal, I think it's amazing. It's what people dream of. And we got three of those. So I'm really proud of that, even if we couldn't get that goal. But it's true that the 06 was big for basketball, was big for Spain, was big for even for Spanish sports. I think since then we showed the other sports as well, even soccer, like we won after us, what it means to go to the national team, what it means to be part of something like that, and put all these egos aside and just play together and just grow as a team. And I think we've been the sample of that since then. So that's where Spanish basketball really started, for sure.
And so obviously that era of Spanish basketball would have a huge impact on Spanish basketball. But when you watch the NBA now and how offenses run and the evolution of pick and roll, do you see the imprint of Spanish basketball on the NBA game as well?
There is stuff that we used to do. And I know, you know, all these Spanish pick and rolls now, and there is some actions, but I think it was about, for us, and I think US, they mentioned a few times some of the guys, I think even US realized that it's not about talent when you play international. It's about, you got to be able to play as a team. And I think that's what they changed. I think when they show up against us the last few years, it wasn't about LeBron James or Kobe Bryant or Carmelo. It was them about playing together as a USA team. I think they lost a few times before that time, and they realized they have to change. And I think we, you know, not great for us, but I think we helped them, us, Argentina, to realize how important it is to play together, be together, and you know, it's a team sport.
Jose, before I let you go here, you've done a lot in your career, 14 years in the NBA, the 3-in-1 podcast that you're doing now. You had a book come out last year. But the first thing that people ask when I tweet out that you're coming on the show, people want to know if you still own a stake in the pig farm.
I know. That's I don't know what that question, why it's so important for people. I love it. No, I don't. When I moved to U.S., I kind of like stopped because U.S. was so many competitors here. So it was great when I was in Canada. I brought a lot of stuff. I sell a lot in Spain. And after with my partners, we like, okay, should we keep going in US or we good here? So I still got the contacts. My partners are still working on it, but I just went in a different direction. So it went really well. I mean, it was an amazing business. It was not just the ham. It was olive oil. It was rice. It was so many things that we got to Toronto. I love it. It was great years. And I love everybody to keep asking about this, the pig farm. And I always say the same thing. I'm like, I don't even own the pig farm. It was just the business side of things. Yeah. But I love it. Even sometimes people ask me, like, how is the ham? All good. Let's keep moving forward. Love this story. It was a great, great days for sure.
Even some front office people will message me and be like, ask him about the ham. Ask him about the ham.
It's great. Because the ham, I still get the ham. Like the same one that I used to bring to Toronto. That's the one I use. Like I eat that one. I love it. It's the best one. And people always ask me about it because they know how good it is. So every time they go to Spain, I got a lot of texts like, hey, we're here eating your ham. I'm like, well, probably it's not exactly mine, but there is so many good brands there that you can have some. So
yeah, it's funny how that works. You have a long NBA career and that, and then people ask me too about the bobblehead that didn't really look like you.
It wasn't bad. You know, we got the threes, you know, and everything. So, I think they're doing a better job with the bobbleheads now.
That's great. Jose, thank you so much for taking the time out. I know you're busy, and good luck with the Cavs playoff run.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Jose Calderon, 14-year NBA vet, 8-year Raptor. I'm not a big, like, for those of you who can't see, I'm talking to Ahmed. Ahmed is on the stage now as well. What's up, man?
Hey, man.
I'm not a big like gear guy. Like I don't have a lot of like merch and memorabilia and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I do have a signed pair of Jose Calderon shoes that like a reader gave me one time. I was like clearing out their storage and was like, "You want these?" Hell yeah.
And your dog or cat was named after Jose, right?
Yeah, I had a dog, this is like a decade ago now. But at the time, the Raptors had Jose Calderon and the Jays had Jose Bautista at the same time. And I was like, wait, this is
it just perfect. Makes too much sense.
Yeah. Okay, let's pivot off the Cavs. So, Amit, you're going to stay with me here for the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, man.
Joe Wolfon and I kind of got into some of the stuff with the Thunder yesterday. Went pretty deep on them.
Yep.
When it comes to the Cavs and the Celtics, and the thing we were talking about with the Thunder, we were talking a lot of positive stuff, but if there was one concern you were going to have with the Thunder, maybe it was the passing quality and the ability for that to create secondary scoring around Shea.
Yeah.
What we're going to talk about is some of the concerns that there might be with other top contenders. Now, these are obviously very, very good teams very late in the season, but we start looking at, well, okay, if things don't go, you know, if the Cavs aren't in the finals, if the Celtics aren't in the finals, if the Lakers aren't in the finals, what has happened?
Sure.
So let's start with the Cavs, since we just talked to Jose Calderon. And as tough as it is sometimes, given the history between the Raptors and the Cavs, we can certainly agree that better the Cavs than the Celtics.
100%. And like, this is a very good team, right? They reached a 60 win for the first time for the third time in franchise history. And I look at a team like that, and I wonder what they look like when they just have one big on the court. And I think they've tinkered with that just a little bit. When Mobley's on the court, when Allen's on the court, when they're both on the court, it's all very good. But when you take one of those off and maybe DeAndre Hunter or Dean Wade is at the four, what does that look like for them? And are they as potent defensively and offensively? Spacing is really important to Kenny Atkinson. And if they don't have that, and at the same time, if they're allowing penetration, are they still going to be able to sustain offensive quality and defensive quality against tougher matchups? I'm curious about that because they haven't had that many reps at it. It's kind of like a lever that they would only use in the event that they really have to, right? And they're probably going to have to in this playoff run.
Well, you're certainly not going to play. Yeah, you're not going to play 48 minutes of Alan Mobley. Now, the one thing I mentioned yesterday, they have a bonkers net rating when both of them are on the court.
Yeah.
But this is a very good team. Their net rating is plus 11 when only one of them are on the court. So as long as they have one, then you get into staggering, you know, okay, I'd have to look at, because Garland and Mitchell can both run pick and roll. Mobley and Allen can both screen. Like, we talk about Raptors staggering lineups sometimes. Yeah. The Cavs could just stagger the rotation such that one elite pick and roll combo is always on the court and how it flows from there. But, yeah, it's interesting. You know, Caris LeVert was generally the guy who would be the extra guy off the bench in a lot of those lineups. Now, when they only have one big on, it tends to be a Sam Merrill or a Ty Jerome. They've gotten an extra guard, but we obviously haven't seen a ton of, DeAndre Hunter's only played about 450 minutes in those lineups. They have won those minutes significantly.
But only 30 minutes with the core four, which I find interesting. Yes. And Kenny Atkinson talked recently about how he has to ranch that up a little bit because that's simply not enough for a lineup that they're going to have to probably use in the playoffs. Now, Donovan Mitchell, I trust him in a playoff setting a lot, like 28-5-5 in 54 playoff games. He's that dude. But at some points, and we saw this against OKC, where Lu Dort's like, you're not going to score, so get out of the way. And so it was kind of like 4-on-4, and that's where Darius Garland and Evan Mobley had to create offense for themselves, and they were successful. Now, if we recall, last season, broken jaw, Darius Garland, his whole season got derailed, but he's looking forward to this run. And if you look at him in clutch time, he is 73% true shooting percentage in that time. He's very good during that window. And I think they're going to have to use that lever multiple times in this playoff run. They're going to need that secondary scoring. And let's not forget that he is also like emerging as that guy. He is so shifty, so creative, such a fascinating player to watch. They're going to need that from him.
Yeah, career-high true shooting percentage on the season overall and almost career-high usage. So you think, oh, maybe he's playing along Mitchell. Maybe he's just – the efficiency's up because he doesn't have to do as much.
Yeah.
Almost career-high usage, really great numbers. And this is not to your point, but he has improved defensively to my eyes as well year to where, you know, you'd think, okay, they're a little bit of a smaller backcourt. What does that look like? They should hold up pretty well.
Guard your yard, essentially. Yeah.
So some questions there rotationally. Now, we're all, I think, pretty confident it's going to be a Cavs-Celtics Eastern Conference Finals. The Knicks, I don't know, man. OG's doing, like, gymnastic-style run the court and dunk and stick the cool landing, scoring 25 every night. But let's focus on the Celtics first. So you mentioned that if the Cavs don't get there, maybe it's a question of how effective they can be when they only have one big on the floor. if the Celtics don't get there, and Matt's talked a lot about, hey, the three-point variance is scary. That can win you games, but it can be scary in a playoff series if it doesn't go your way. What's the concern? You know, if Boston doesn't make the NBA Finals, what has happened?
So I'll start with Jason Tatum first. And we all recall, like, he didn't win Finals MVP last year. And whether it's a blemish on his legacy, all that stuff, like, who knows? But frankly, like, it was deserved to go to Jaylen Brown because of how Tatum was pretty up and down in that series. However, their road to the Finals and winning a title this year is going to be much harder.
Mm-hmm.
Conference Finals, Finals, it's going to be very different.
And even they're going to get the Knicks in the second round if everything goes chalk, right?
Hopefully Brunson's healthy, yeah.
Physically, that's a tougher series to get
100%. Through. And so you're looking at Tatum now, and I'm curious how he's able to react to defenses, his speed of thought, as he is, like, Mazzulla's already said that he's their guy. You know, clutch time, 2 minutes left, the ball's going to be in his hands. How many times is he going to make the right decision? And I'm not sure about that exactly. He does have his highest assist percentage of his career this season. The reads are getting faster. And in that game against OKC recently, you know, third quarter, fourth quarter, he definitely found it. But first half, it wasn't there. And when in a playoff setting again, where teams are going through multiple schemes, multiple coverages in one game, like, is he going to be able to keep up with that and keep on making the right decision? It's going to be a tough thing for him, especially against, you know, the teams that they're going to encounter. But that's going to be probably a big challenge for him, and in turn, a big challenge for the Celtics.
And speaking of Jason Tatum and awards like Finals MVP last year, Tim Bontemps had his latest straw poll come out on the NBA MVP race, which I don't have an actual vote, but I vote in Tim Bontemps' mock poll, which is usually a pretty accurate predictor. I had Tatum third. He finished fourth in the straw poll, but he's like right there, him and Giannis, 3-4.
Yeah.
To give it away, Shea had 77 first-place votes to 23 for Jokic. So Shea looks a little ahead. Let's use that to pivot to the Western Conference.
Yep.
We won't do OKC. Joe and I talked about it a bunch yesterday.
Great combo, by the way.
Thanks. Okay, the other teams there. Now, OKC is standings-wise, net rating-wise, metric-wise, ahead above the rest of those teams. But I'll leave it open to you. Who do you think is next up in the Western Conference, and where, you know, what is the kind of yellow flag that, hey, maybe they can't get by OKC because of this?
I go back and forth on this all the time. Today, I'm on the Lakers.
Okay. I thought you were going to say today you're on. I know the Nuggets lost last night, but when Jokic has a 61-point triple-double.
Well, why does he have to do that? That's my problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyways.
I think they're winless on it. Someone tweeted out that they're winless on the year when he scores 50-plus, which obviously it's not because he scored 50-plus, but he only scores that much when things are going poorly is
and
how
no
I read
Murray
that.
Last night, too.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk Lakers.
Okay, so I look at this team, and it's if we're just going to accept that LeBron James is going to keep on doing this, which I think maybe we just have to, LeBron James as an off-ball player is ridiculous, right?
So
and so
good.
Now you have him encountering four-on-threes, attacking closeouts. He's their low man in a lot of cases, and the way he reads the game, how fast he goes from acting to thinking and just pursuing. It's pretty dazzling, actually, to watch him do that. Yeah, go ahead.
Really great conversation, by the way. So the Mind the Game podcast is back with LeBron and Steve Nash. And Steve Nash was pressing LeBron on this. And because LeBron was a lot of like, oh, it's a want-to when it comes to cutting and moving off the ball and stuff like that. And Steve Nash like really pushed him. So LeBron gets into it pretty well about this transition into, certainly not a secondary player, but Luka's got the ball a lot, and that's a shift in role for him.
Yeah, and it's a good thing for him at this point of his career, right? That Luka can take on those responsibilities. He's obviously very good at it. And so their small ball lineup of Doncic, Reeves, Finney Smith, Rui, and LeBron, they're plus 9.7 in 140 possessions. Now, Jackson Hayes is their center, and they're going to need him at various points in a playoff run if they encounter a Jokic or whatever. But the way that the gap help that they offer, their gang rebounding, like how actively they are doing this, along with LeBron, he just sees everything before it happens. And if he can continue doing that, you know, in a playoff run, like who's to say that they can't just make this run when they have Luka and that kind of spacing? Like I see the vision against like an OKC, Chet, Hardenstein. It's going to be tough for them, but who's to say that they can't do it? And if we are going to talk about OKC being like this unbelievable of a team, and they are, right? It's going to take an unconventional lineup like this one to do it.
So you mentioned, you have Luka to put the ball in his hands, and you have, spacing around that. What do you think the chances are we see a good diet of LeBron as the de facto center?
I think we're going to see a lot of it.
Yeah, given that Jackson Hayes is like, I guess like you could get technical, be like, oh, Jared Vanderbilt's the center or whatever, but yeah. Rui's the center. Rui guarded Jokic for reps the other year.
It'll probably be a tandem between them two, like who does it. I guess that's kind of the beauty of it is that you don't really know who it's going to be, but it's going to be some kind of combination of those guys. And then also, like now you have Austin Reeves being the third player, at least in terms of usage, and now he's getting the third best defender. If he's able to account for that and make smart decisions out of that kind of decision making, then I think that that's like a really valuable way in which they can put up like efficient offense.
Okay, we're going to go rapid fire for these next couple.
Yep.
Denver does not make it to the Western Conference Finals because?
Jamal Murray doesn't provide the second best scoring, which they definitely need.
You are not welcome at Moose Winooski's.
I am after sorry. No that. Longer allowed in Kitchener.
No Kitchener for you. No Will Riley draft pick for the Raptors. I am encouraged by Jamal trending in the right direction strongly as the season goes. There's some blips here and there, and obviously he didn't play last night due to the hamstring issue, but has been trending in the right direction generally. Golden State, who got 52-10-8-5 from Steph last night and have looked maybe like the best non-OKC team in the West since they got Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
They don't make the Western Conference Finals because
they don't get supporting scoring games from their cast of characters. Like, you look at that Raptors run, they had big Danny Green games, Norm Powell, Serge Ibaka, Fred VanVleet. They all did one or two games along a playoff run. They're going to need a game from Pods, Moses Moody. They're going to need like Buddy Hield to have like a 5 or 6 threes in a game kind of thing. Quentin Post, too.
Kuminga.
They're going to need all these guys to do that.
Kuminga's got a lot of money on the line in this playoff run, you'd think, headed into RFA.
For sure, right? And I have a lot of faith in the Jimmy Butler and Steph Curry, like their pick and roll. It's been gotten a lot better over time, and that's going to be their go-to action down the stretch of games. Then you have Draymond Green, who's like one of the best problem solvers in the NBA. So there's no reason to think that those three aren't going to do it, but I worry about the supporting cast a little bit.
All right, New York Knicks do not make the Eastern Conference Finals because
their dial-up offense doesn't cut it.
It's Jalen Brunson's health is where my concern would drop in this one. Like, I think they can probably win a first round playoff series even without Brunson at 1,000%. They're going, although Milwaukee could be tough if you're going against. We'll see if Dame's back as well on the Milwaukee side.
I can't see it. How is he back?
I'm not a deep vein thrombosisist. Okay. I don't know how these things work.
Good enunciation there.
Yeah, they said that it's like they're encouraged about it. But yeah, like if you get the Knicks get the Bucks without Dame, and you've got OG as like your Giannis guy, I think the Knicks might be able to get through that with Brunson at less than 100%. But you're definitely not beating the Celtics without Brunson at 1,000%.
No, and do you trust? Like, do you think Tom Thibodeau can scheme up offense in the finals and in the conference finals against really good defenses? Like, I'm not sure if I believe in that, but he can do it.
And yeah, I mean, like right now you're getting 25 a night from OG over the last couple weeks. Like, he'll have a couple games like that, and who knows, maybe the Celtics are a team that dare hit and be like, hey, we're gonna bet against it, take all the open threes you want, take all the baseline cuts you want, to turn the tap off on a Jalen Brunson, on a Karl Anthony Towns. But it'd be fascinating to see. My biggest takeaway from this conversation is that the playoffs are going to rule. Other than the 1-7 and 2-8 matchups in the East, every series is going to be phenomenal. We got the play-in schedule today as well, which starts on the 15th.
And we haven't talked Clippers yet.
No. And
they're surging too.
Yes. And obviously, the easy answer for the Clippers is why don't they make? Well, health. If we get playoff Kawhi, we're going to get that'll be pretty, pretty fun. Okay, time now for Fast Break, brought to you by BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. It is a bad slate of NBA games tonight. And I don't say that because, you know, I thought last night, the first half, Raptors-Bulls was kind of fun. A lot of good three-point shooting. Kobe White looks awesome. You can take stuff from these games. But tonight, there are 9 games on the slate. And 8 of them have a spread of double digits. The only one that doesn't, so we'll take a focus on that. Hawks at Mavericks. Mavericks are 3.5-point favorites. Also interesting because the Mavs are now 9th in the West. They're 2 up on Phoenix, so a chance to clinch one of those play-in spots. They're also half a game up on Sacramento to host that 9-10 matchup, which is a pretty big swing deal. And interesting, they're 4-1 with Anthony Davis in the lineup and 3-1 with Anthony Davis in, even without Kyrie. So some good indicators there. And the big one for this one, listed as questionable and potentially playing for the first time since January 14th, is Derek Lively. Could be a big addition back for them as they try to salvage something out of this awkward year for them. On the Atlanta side, they're on a back-to-back, so we don't know who they're going to have, but Clint Capela, Jalen Johnson, Larry Nance, Kobe Bufkin, Jacob Toppin, Keaton Wallace were all out last night on the first end of a back-to-back. So we'll see. That's a Hawks team, by the way. They're tied for seventh in the East. They can't get the sixth, but they're trying to fight and make sure you host the 7-8 game. You get two cracks at it to make it through the playoffs. And shout out to Dyson Daniels, who has won back-to-back Eastern Conference Defensive Players of the Month. We got a lot of former Raptors and 905 staff over there who work with Dyson Daniels. So shout out to Brittany Donaldson, Brian Schmidt, and Ashton Smith as well. Dyson Daniels, phenomenal defender. We'll see if he's on the DPOY ballots. That was Fast Break, brought to you by BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. Thanks to Garrett Temple for joining us and to Jose Calderon. That was a treat. Amit Mann, thank you for joining me for a little bit there and for booking those. Thanks to Jake Schultz and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. We will be back tomorrow. Matt Bonner will be back tomorrow. We'll have a Raptors game to set up. They've got a back-to-back at home against the Blazers and the Pistons. Last two games left on the schedule. Hope you all have a wonderful Wednesday. Matt's back tomorrow. Talk to you then.